Dennis, we were just together in Hong Kong with Franklin Graham at that crusade. You and I both saw incredible numbers, probably record numbers. Tell us your impressions of that city and the crusade itself, the festival.
I honestly thought that going to Hong Kong would be an extremely difficult place to go to. The communists have allowed that to still become a capitalistic city, and it's almost capitalistic communism is what it is. And I'm thinking for people that work and that make money and to find the time to go to a stadium and really where the Communist Party is, they're not really for Christianity and Christian crusades, and to be able to go in there and hold an event at a venue like that was just unbelievable. The response from the people, mm-hmm. the people that are Christians that bring other people, and 126,000 people the last night, and the night before I think a little over 100,000, and then 86,000 the night before, and I was amazed. I was just amazed in how somebody sent me a YouTube of my plane and how the people seemed to be pretty responsive in the crowd, you know, sitting way back in the crowd. Somebody took video of it. And then with Franklin's preaching, how they just listen. All the heads were turned to the left. And I was really moved. And, of course, you went to the other stadium and spoke for Franklin in front of thousands of people, probably 50,000 to 60,000, and how they responded to you. It's I'm humbled to be able to do anything like this. I think that it's the last resort is evangelism, people getting saved. You know, they go to heaven when they die. They aren't separated from the Lord in hell. And to me, I'd rather have 5 billion babies in heaven than 5 spiritual giants that know everything.
Dennis, I've watched you on countless occasions here at our fellowship and a lot of other places, and people love it. You make them happy when you get your guitar and you play so fast and you smile so big and you jump around on stage. You're kind of larger than life. Tell me what it felt like being in Hong Kong, a whole different culture, and you're in a venue that seats 40,000 people. Then you're on screens and overflow venues, so they don't maybe get the same kind of impression that we who are up close see, yet the response to you was pretty phenomenal, wasn't it?
Well, it was an honor. As long as you know you got new strings and the sound system works good, you're with a sound crew that travels with you about 8 different venues in the United States and the world, and it's just an opportunity to play a song and to play the guitar. How many people in Asia love the guitar but to represent, you know, the Lord and to prepare hearts really for Franklin, it's pretty overwhelming. You go back and you sit down and you go, there's so many other great guitar players, you know, that are better than I. And I mean, for me to be able to be there is a real honor. And since 1974, I guess all those schools that I did for a day, we do prisons and things, and of course do Mr. Graham's crusade one night or two nights during the week, but it just is an honor. It's just an honor to be there. It's a joy. A lot of times people might think, boy, here I am, and they've got visions of grandeur, and I'm a rock singer, or I'm a performer, and look at this crowd here. But I go to your church, and those people would be there anyway, whether I'm there or not. And so for me to have an opportunity to play for them, just like Franklin's festivals, is the same great honor that I have to play anywhere.
Well, I'm looking over at your schedule at a couple places that you're heading out to in 2008. Interesting places like Belfast, Ireland, or Knoxville, Tennessee, Romania. Tell us a little bit about those.
Romania is a country very similar to Moldova or the Ukraine where I played, and the people are hungry for the gospel in Eastern Europe. And for me to be able to go and to be just a spoke on a wheel, but something that may intrigue someone that likes music and likes guitar, then they would open their heart to listen to Franklin. And that's really my job. To go to Knoxville or anywhere, it's when you stand up there and you walk up there, it never gets old. And if it does get old, then you better not be doing it. There are other reasons you're doing it. And so I'm just blessed to be able to do that. I'm a person that doesn't have a hit record out. I've sold a lot of product and things, but for me to be able to get up there and to play, even though I'm Franklin's friend or Greg Laurie's friend or your friend, I have to do good, or, you know, sometimes people look at you a little deeper to go, well, he's friends with them. Let's see how good he is. You know, so there's that pressure of wanting to do a good job representing friends like you and Franklin. And so it's important for me to come in and to maximize my efforts and crystallize whatever I'm going to do and make sure it's simple and don't talk too much and really let the preaching be the pastor and do the right songs and that are going to really set the speaker up.
So. You've always done that, Dennis. You've always kept the word, the message prominent. But I want to talk to you just a little bit about your music, because when you get up on a platform or a stage or in a venue like the arena in Hong Kong, you put a smile on people's face and they get real happy and then they start clapping. And there's this reaction and interaction that happens between you and an audience. And it was Martin Luther, I think, that said that music is the handmaiden of theology. And so tell us a little bit about what music does, how the Lord uses music to open up people, whether it's in Belfast or Hong Kong or Tennessee. What does music do that gets hearts ready for the gospel?
I think that it's a tool to get the heart ready, but I don't know that guitar players will ever change the world. It's a foolishness of preaching. But for me to walk up and say, you know, I'm going to do this, first of all, I see what music is being played. Okay, I want to do something different. If I was playing somewhere with you or Franklin Graham or Greg Laurie and Ricky Skaggs was there and then Charlie Daniels was there, I would probably do a classical song on the guitar and stay the classical and stay to the old hymns. It just all depends. It's trying to do the smart thing to try to persuade the crowd emotionally, logically, or ethically to really listen to the message that's going to come up. And it's sometimes it's like being a racquetball player. You may not be as good as your opponent, but if you're smarter than he is, you're going to hit passing shots, and you're going to play the right song, and the people are going to respond. I was with you in Jamaica, and I remember that several bands from America came and they tried to do reggae music.
Right, I remember.
And many people were doing reggae music. Well, I thought, these people do like the old hymns, so I did the old hymns. They seemed to respond. Not that I'm better than anybody else. It just might be a more wise decision to make in what songs you do. And so that's what I try to do. I'm not the greatest singer in the world. Wayne Newton isn't a great recording artist, but he's a great communicator. I think that there are other people that were great communicators, and they may not sell a lot of records, but yet they're great performers and communicators. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try to do. And
Dennis, I just want to say I've noticed this. Whether you're in a venue of 100,000 people, whether you have 200 people in a church, or whether, and I've been with you in refugee camps where you've gone into tents and just spoken to families and played music for 5 people, you play with the same fervor and intensity and heart. And that really shows through, I think.
We were in Iraq, and I'll never forget that. And how you even went to Baghdad, and how, I mean, it's just amazing the places that you've gone to, the dangerous parts of the world. I remember being in that tent with you in the Iraqi border, going inside Iraq and seeing the people. And, well, thank you very much. What an honor that you'd say that, and it means a lot coming from you.
Well, Dennis, let's look back a little bit on this last year, 2007. It was a great year for ministry. We've touched on that. But at the same time, we've lost some good friends in the ministry. We sat together or close by each other at the funeral of Ruth Graham back in North Carolina. And you've been close to the Graham family, right?
Very close. Actually, I was closer to Ruth than Franklin or anybody else at first. She was a really close friend, and that was an honor for me to know her.
Tell us about her. What was she like?
I'll be dead level honest. I went in the house one time. There was 5 druggy guys there. And, you know, she opened her home for these castaways and throwaways. And this one guy was sick, and he was throwing up. I said, let me throw these guys out of here. She said, don't you dare. Hmm. You know, they're God's children and they need love. And boy, I how can you have these people in your home? They just, you know, of course she has staff there from the Billy Graham organization and her own staff. She's not there alone with these people, but how can you, you know, I mean, I could see you loving them. Not by word of tongue, but deed and truth. She does it by deed and truth by doing it. She would want to do dangerous. I took her dirt bike riding one time, and she said, "Don't tell Billy. If you don't tell him, I won't be in trouble." I mean,
she did have a sense of humor.
Every time you were at the Cove, every time you would go speak there, I don't care how she was feeling, if she was in bed, she would get up. Somebody would bring her down, and she would listen to you. She'd sit there on the side there, towards the left there, and she'd sit there and listen to you. She loved you so much, and your teaching. She just loved your teaching. And whenever you were there, every time, it was fascinating. But we went in front of a bar, and I was preaching and playing in front of this bar, and she told me to go in and preach to them, and I didn't do it. And then, so she said, "Look, I want you to do a prison for me." So we went to this prison. And it's a county jail. You go upstairs, and all the cells, it's a huge room, and all the way around are cells. And so I said, "Okay." She said, "I want you to play 15 minutes, and I want you to preach 15 minutes, and lead them to the Lord." I said, "Yes, ma'am." So I went, and I stood in the middle, and I started to play, and she walked up to me, and she said, "What are you doing?" Interrupted me. I said, "Well, you told me to play for the inmates are standing at their cell." She said, "I want you to go to every cell." I said, "What?" I said, and then I disagreed with her. I said, "They could hear me. I'm right here. They can all see me." She said, "I know. I don't want you playing in the middle. I want you going to every cell."
Wow.
So I went to the first cell, and she goes, 15 minutes, and then you preach 15. Skip, I was there 3.5-4 hours, and she stood next to me. Well, here's the wife of Billy Graham. What am I going to say? You know, I just said John 3:16, and I didn't preach it 15 minutes. I was 10 or 5 minutes. And then she said, "Let's go to the next one." And the guy's just standing there. He's already heard the message. He's already heard the music. I'm 5 feet away from his cell. She made me do the same thing at the next cell. All the way around. I'm going, "Well, this lady works you." and that's what she made me do. I'll never forget, she had a ribbon in her hair. And, you know, Ruth was just a beautiful lady.
She was.
And she stood
gracious.
There, and at everyone, she stood there holding her Bible. And then she would say, "God bless you." And I would introduce, "This is Mrs. Billy Graham," you know. And then it was just so interesting, you know, pretty fascinating.
Yes. Sometime back, you did an outreach at Angola Prison down in the Deep South. What was that like?
It was a joy. You look at it as an evangelistic crusade. Sometimes you'll go to prisons and you get angry because you find out what some of the people are in there for. You know, they killed their wives or their kids, and it's hard sometimes to think, you know, I kind of don't want to be here. But on the other hand, when you see the results and how people get saved, and you know what? Jesus died for them too. And that cross is an unlimited atonement. And he died for them. And so to have that great opportunity to play for those guys, the good news is Jesus and the bad news is me, and to try to get them on your side and to perform songs that you think they would listen to.
That's a song you've actually sung before. How does it go?
Well, it was kind of a song as a joke. We ended up doing it at Promise Keepers because a lot of the men, you know, are struggling in their faith. So it goes, I've got a big 44 under my seat. My knuckles are sore from somebody's teeth. Every side of my bed is the wrong side you see. But the good news is Jesus and the bad news is me. And it goes on. And then the last verse is good. The good news is Jesus. The bad news I've seen in me. But he died for my sins at Calvary. Keep your eyes on the Savior. Don't you worry about me. He'll save a sinner like me. He can set us all free.
That's great.
So it's kind of cool. Yeah, it's been fun at Promise Keepers. It is. You get a bunch of men in the conference, you do that. They like it.
Dennis, on that Angola outreach that you went to, did you meet a guy named Burl Kane? He was the warden there.
Yes, I did. Interesting man. Very interesting man. met him and thought he was fascinating how he led so many people to the Lord that were to be executed.
Wow.
And, you know, when Mrs. Graham died, before she went to meet the Lord, she found out that her casket was made by a murderer from Angola prison named Grasshopper Leggett. And she said, I can't wait to be buried in a casket of a murderer that found the Lord.
Hmm.
And then Billy even ordered one. Grasshopper Leggett made this casket.
And that was the casket that that was at her funeral,
yes,
as I recall.
Absolutely. Yeah, he made that.
Wow. I want to go to another friend of yours. Dr. Jerry Falwell passed away this last year.
Right.
Were you close with him?
You know, I was pretty close for being there three times.
Hmm.
You know, he was backstage, and he walked up to me the first time I played his church. He said, this is Thomas Road Baptist Church, and I'm the head pastor. And I'm backstage, you know. I said, I noticed you got a cowboy hat on. Nobody's ever played in my church wearing a cowboy hat. So take your hat off. I said, yes, sir. I took my hat off. He looked at me and said, do me one favor right now. I said, yes, sir. Put your hat back on. I didn't think I looked that bad without it. And then I played. And then he got up. And he was a great guy. I'll tell you what, he was fun. There was a time you would go on his campus, he'd be wrestling a guy right in the middle of the lawn. There'd be 100 people around. You think it's a fight. It's him with his suit on. You know, he was tough. And then I rode with him one time in a Suburban. He went right up the steps of the library with his Suburban, just clear to the top of the steps, turned the thing around and went back and would chase people with the guy. I mean, he was wild. He was like that. And the people just loved him. The students loved Jerry. You know, they were there. But let me tell you something. You're leaving your son or your daughter with Jerry Falwell. You got a good dad there leaving your kids with. I mean, he made sure everybody was okay and secure. I really liked him. He was a great man. He really was.
Dennis, you've been doing this for 35 years. You've been on the road playing songs. That's hard. And a lot of people I know don't appreciate what the life of a minstrel is, a traveling musicianary, so to speak. You're still producing new albums, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. We're still, we've been blessed to be able to do that. I want to do another one. We're talking about a hymns project next, and I'm excited about the possibility of that.
Tell us about your latest album. Is it Come to the Rock?
Yeah, I did Come to the Rock, and did it in a real fashion of an unplugged thing. You know, we made sure the vocals were right. But instead of this, you know, electric drum behind you or a metronome behind you and having to do things just perfectly in studio, sometimes you lose just the touch of what the song really is. And I enjoyed being able to record it at a place that I have here in San Clemente. And we brought all the equipment in here and, of course, we had everything set up here, and I did it here in my place, overlooking the ocean. It was a lot
beautiful.
Of fun to just play and do the project here and work.
Well, Dennis, let's listen to a cut from that album.
That's Dennis Agajanian from the CD Come to the Rock on this First Friday edition of The Connection. And we're making available this CD of music by Dennis. And we'll have details after this conversation with Skip Heitzik and Dennis Agajanian.
Dennis, you know, you mentioned that you haven't gotten any hit records, etc. But as I recall, you've been awarded some pretty renowned titles in the guitar playing world. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I just won Musician of the Year, and it's the fifth time I've won it. The Inspirational Country Music Awards. It's an organization in Nashville that the Country Music Association has. Really, 15 people that they recognize: Tim McGraw and Faith Hill and Brooks and Dunn, people like that. But there's so many other people like Hank Williams Jr. and Charlie Daniels and other people that and the Judds and other people that aren't really recognized as much anymore in the Country Music Association. So the Inspirational Country Music Association has really brought a lot of these people in, and Alabama and different people like that, and it's been phenomenal. And I've been I won Musician of the Year, and I've won Entertainer of the Year three times, and I won Musician five times.
That's
so
pretty phenomenal.
It's been a real honor, and to go against people that I think are a lot better than I am. But it's been an honor for me to receive these awards. Mm.
Dennis, I want you to just sort of shift now and picture talking to a worship leader of a church who's given kind of his story to you and asking for your advice. He's a young musician, and he may be listening even now over the radio, but there you are. He's saying, Dennis, you know, I want to be a recording artist, and I want to do more in music. Give that guy or gal some advice.
I would say this: when they're performing on a platform, a person may have gotten in an argument with their wife or daughter coming to church. Some people are out of work. Some people are hurting emotionally, and some people just are not having a good month and a good day, a good year. And it's important for us to, when we sing worship, to be communicators to the people. That's half of it, not how perfect the music is. And burn the music stand. Don't even stare at a chart. Don't look at anything. Memorize every song. And when you memorize a song, it's not a Hollywood smile, but turn to the right and to the left, and not stare at people, but look at everybody as a whole. Hmm. And, you know, it's like a street preacher. If a street preacher looks at one guy, then he's pretty much being a threat to that person, whatever he's saying. If you're in a, even in a heated situation where there's riots going on, you're preaching to everybody. You know, each individual person down, you're going to be okay. Hmm. And I think in performing, it's a battle going on sometimes, and you need to look at everyone now and then. Stop it. Don't stare at different people, and perform. And I don't care if the camera's on you. You don't think of that camera. You think of those people you're playing to. And I think we need to really do a good job representing the Lord.
Dennis, thanks for being with us, and we can't wait to see you soon in Albuquerque.
Well, you're a good friend. I love you, and love to Linya.